really confusing. I was just like, oh, okay. I can't get it. There you go. Here, clip it.
Clip it. Clip it.
I can't, like,
wait, I can't just hook it to the
I know, but it's like, I want to unclip it. I got it. That was embarrassing. Okay, this is pretty weird. So I wanted to speak on something that was like real to me, that like right now in my life, and that was kind of like how we're all making big decisions. Like everyone's super old and they're all getting married. Like I went to 2 weddings this year, and they were like 2 of my best friends, and I was sitting there, I was like, man, like, this is getting kind of strange. Like, oh my goodness, they're gonna have kids one day? Like, no. But I kind of wanted to just speak about how when we're making decisions and you're getting older and you have to kind of like lean on God a lot more. Like, when I was like 10, I mean, I wasn't like praying about everything. Like, I didn't make any decisions that were a big deal back then. But now I'm like having to talk to people at banks about loans for college, and you have to pray about that stuff. You actually have to think about it. But because my favorite song from a hymn is Be Thou My Vision. And like, I kind of wanted to just speak about that. And I found this verse that I really like, Romans 7:15. Does anybody have the New Living Translation? Doubtful. It's really weird, random thing for me to pick. But the New Living Translation, they kind of wrote it in a really cool way. They said, I don't really understand myself for what I want to do, what is right, but I don't do it. Instead, I do what I hate. And that's Paul speaking. And he says, I don't really understand myself. And that really hit me in a way, like, I don't understand myself. I really don't. I don't get it. Why do I do the things I do? And I don't ever, like, just ask, maybe that's what God wanted me to do. No, that's what Jonathan wanted me to do. And I kind of thought about that, and I was like, if I don't really understand myself, then who does understand me? Because I would get me the best out of anybody, right? But, so I was looking at other verses to kind of, like, show a good way to show God's direction in our lives. And I came across a Psalm 25:4. It says, show me your ways, Lord, teach me your paths. You don't have to be turning to all this. I have lists of verses over here. But our one goal here is he asked us to do one thing, and that was to come and follow him. We just, that's all we had to do. We don't have like, there's nothing else. Just follow him. And we often, like, so many times, like, fail in doing that through our day-to-day life. We don't care. We don't do whatever. It's not important to us. We're running around. We're doing our thing. We're just not thinking, like, is that what God would have wanted me to do? Or is that what I would have wanted me to do? Is that what Dave would have wanted me to do? Is it whatever? And we're just sitting there, like, this it's become our life. It's not become God's life and his plan for us, you know. So I kind of wanted to look at some people in the Bible who went with God's plan and who did not go with God's plan. So if you want to turn to Genesis 6:22, that would be great. All right, so we're talking about Noah here, and I didn't want to read all of this because I have like a bunch of people to go over. So I just like was focusing on where it said they followed his plan and stuff. So I know Genesis 6:22, it said, thus did Noah according to all that God commanded him, and so did he. And he said, and verse 1, the Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. And it's kind of crazy, but Noah didn't really know what God was really telling him to build an ark for. He didn't understand why. God just told him, hey, you want to build this giant thing nobody ever uses? You want to build this boat really quick? And Noah's like, well, okay, you know, I'm gonna do it. And he listened to God, and everyone made fun of him. He got persecuted for it. And people did all sorts of stuff to his family. They were outcast for a while, and everything started to go terribly. But then it started to rain a little bit, and people were like, uh-oh, this is a little strange, a little weird. I've never seen this before. And then it started to rain a whole lot, a whole bunch. And they're like, uh-oh, this isn't good. But since Noah, like, listened to what God told him to do, he was saved from the flood, and his family was saved because they were with him, and they followed God as well. And if you kind of, like, start to look throughout the Bible, the people who follow God's plan aren't always going to get rewarded. They're not always going to be like, the highest guy around. They're not always going to be cool, but they're definitely not going to have the, like, problems, I would say, that the ones who didn't follow God had. They're going to at least, like, know where they're at with their life. They're going to know what they're supposed to be doing. They're going to know what's going on. So if you want to look at Genesis 39, we're going to look at Joseph's life. In Genesis 39, it says, Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him into the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down hither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hands. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him as overseer over his house. And the story goes that Joseph was he was sold into slavery by his brothers. They left him in a hole somewhere, and they're like, here, just take him away, you know, do whatever with him, because they were jealous of him. And Joseph just was, I'm going to lean on God, you know, it'll be fine. He was cast into prison for a little while. But Joseph, throughout his whole life and his whole like experiences, he never once was just like, you know what, God, you really messed me up here. You kind of like brought me to a whole other country. You know, I'm like in prison now because of you. Like, my brothers are the worst. Everyone's the worst. It's terrible. Nothing like that happened. And Joseph was literally made governor of Egypt. He was a slave, and he was made governor over all of Egypt and all of their food storage. And then his brothers come, and his brothers have to come crawling back to this guy and asking him for food, because if they don't, they're going to die. Like, I don't know about you guys, but if somebody wrongs me and they come asking me for something, I'm not going to be like, you know what, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm sure, I'll help you out. Your car's broken down on the side of the road. You punched me in the face earlier, I'm going to still help you. You know, no. I'm going to drive by really slowly, like roll down the window and be like, hey, what's up? You see my car? It works. Yours doesn't. But that's my human nature, and it's a mess. It's a mess. That's not God's plan. That's not what God would want from us. That's not how anything would really go. if you want to be a good Christian, that's not what you're going to do. But if you just keep looking throughout the whole Bible, you can just keep coming across people that who listened to God's plan or didn't listen to God's plan, and they paid for it in the end, pretty much. So if you want to look at Acts chapter 9, we're going to look at Paul. Well, he's Saul at this point, so disregard that it's Saul, not Paul. And if you look at Paul, this is what they call the Damascus Road. It's like him kind of getting to God. He was kind of in the right track a little bit. He was starting to realize some things. And it's like, then Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked for two letters of him to the synagogues of Damascus, so that it may be found who were of the way, whether men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. In verse 3, he says, as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly a light showed around him from the heavens. 4, and then he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, who are you, Lord? And then the Lord answered, I am Jesus, who you are persecuting. It is hard for you to kick against the goad. So he, trembling, astonished, said, Lord, what do you want me to do? And then the Lord said to him, arise and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. And the men who journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice but seeing no one. And Saul arose from the ground, when his eyes opened, he saw no one. But they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. And he was there 3 days without sight, and neither ate nor drank. Now with Saul is kind of an interesting one, because Saul didn't really like listen as well as most of them would at the beginning. He was kind of a terrible guy at first. He was persecuting all the wrong people. He didn't think Jesus was who he said he was. He didn't understand it whatsoever, and he kind of paid for that here when God made him blind. Because at first he was like, I think that was kind of God trying to show him that who he was, who he said he was. He was trying to show him that he did have the power to do what he wanted to do, and he was trying to put Saul on the right path. And Saul would end up going to be Paul and becoming one of the greatest missionaries to ever grace the earth. And just because he like listened to God, like he followed God's plan, put us through a hardship as Christians. He will let us go through hardships, just like he did with Job. He will let us go through things that we're not going to love so much, but in the end it'll be better for us. Like, no one said it's going to be easy. Nothing's ever easy, but you're going to come out a better person for it in the end. It's just like summer camp for football. You might be out there and you almost pass out, but you're going to get stronger, you're going to get faster, you're going to get better, you're going to be better than that other guy, and you have to work a little bit harder for it, but you're going to be so much better in the end for it. So now we're going to look at people who didn't really listen to God, and these are kind of really short because what happens to them are terrible. So we know with Jonah, God told Jonah to do one thing. What did he say? He said, go and preach to the Ninevites. And Jonah was like, no, I'm going to go the other way. Jonah was eaten by a fish. He was eaten by a fish, okay? Jonah, like, he didn't listen to God. So God sent a giant fish, and he got eaten by it. I don't think I need to really comment on that. But Lot's wife had one job. She said, don't turn around. Don't look at the city on fire right behind you. She got turned into a pillar of salt. She got turned into a pillar of salt. I really don't know what else to tell you about that one. David, because he shed so much blood and just was, like, starting to go his own way, became a big and high, mighty man, couldn't build the temple. And that doesn't sound like a big deal, but that was kind of a goal that David had, that with his whole life. He wanted to please God, but he kind of wanted to please himself for a lot of it. So God said, you can't build the temple. And with Moses, now this one kind of hits you home a little bit. Moses led the Israelites for a long, long time. Moses bringing them around, and they're whining. Moses is still pretty good. He's like, oh God, I can't do this. Please help me. I can't deal with these people, God. And he's like, God's just like, keep going on, Moses. It's okay. And he leads them. Then he ends up striking the rock twice. And that was his, like, one mistake. Moses made a few mistakes in his life, but that was his one big kicker mistake. And after all the time of leading the Israelites, he couldn't enter the Promised Land. How would that have felt? You led the Israelites for years on top of years. You freed them from the Egyptians. You got them out of there in one piece, more or less. You led them through, like, giant walls of water, almost killing you, probably. You're scared out of your mind. But you can't enter the Promised Land because you struck a rock twice, just because you didn't listen to what God told you to do. And I'm not trying to say that God's going to, like, punish you, like, terribly. Like, if you don't listen to him one time, he's going to throw some horrible, horrible tragedy in your life. You're gonna end up into a pillar of salt or anything like that. But if you just start to read through the Bible, that he chastens those he loves, and he will chasten you to the point where it might break you a little bit. But if you go on that right path, you are going to end up a lot better than you would have in the other hand. So if you want to look at Matthew 5:13, we're trying to see how we can follow the path that God sets before us and how we become the best Christian that we possibly can be. And in Matthew 5:13, it says, you're the salt of the earth, but if the salt hath lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men. You're the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle, but put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. It will give light unto all that are in the house. So I think that one that verse is trying to say is we're supposed to be like above the world. We're not supposed to be in it. We're supposed to kind of hold ourselves a certain way when we're trying to walk the path of a Christian. When you're walking the path of a Christian, people should be able to tell who you are before you're saying what you're saying. They shouldn't, like, hear you in a place or see you reading a Bible and be like, oh, he's a Christian. They should see by how you walk and how you hold yourself and how you do the things that you do. And if you lose your savor when you're frustrated and you lose the thing that goes about you, people are going to just be like, oh, he's kind of like everyone else. He's not different. There's nothing special about them. There's nothing, like, a little different about them. The Christians that we have now, they're fake. They're whatever. They're not a real thing. We don't like them. But if you look at Romans 8:18, I know I'm going all over the place. Which is funny because Chris kind of stole my message a little bit. And I was like looking and I was like, oh man, hey, that's in my message. I was like, oh, Chris, should have gone first. verse 18 says, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. But that verse, I love that verse because it's basically saying the pain that you're going through now, will not compare it to like the joy that is going to be coming for you. It's like, we're going to go through these terrible things. The world is going to beat you down in the end. It's going to bring you to the point where you just like, I cannot do this anymore, or you're crying, you're just miserable. But when you think about it, it's okay, because we all know where we're going. We all know what's happening for us. We're set. We're set for life, man. We're set for life. It's great. There's nothing that can compare to what we're getting in the end. And if you just keep thinking that way, like, the hard times don't hit you as hard anymore. The bad things aren't as bad as it could be. And you're still hurting a lot, I'm sure, but you're not feeling it as much as you would be. You're kind of putting it a little bit on God, which is where he brings us to Psalm 55:22, which says, "Cast thy burdens upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee, and he shall never forget the suffer and the righteous to be moved." But that's another thing. It was like, you have to cast your burdens on God in prayer. You have to be in the Word. You have to be constantly praying, is this the right thing to do? Is this the thing I should do? God, please help me, teach me, show me what I'm supposed to do. Be a lamp unto my feet. Show me the thing that I need to be. Lead me like a shepherd leads a sheep. I can't stress that enough, that there are so many times that where I think what Jonathan wants to do is the right thing to do, where I, like, my decisions are the best decisions, and they're not the best decisions. I'll tell you that right now. Ask my parents. They're not the best decision. If you want to look at Proverbs 1:7, this is almost the last verse I'll get you to look at. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. I kind of took this verse to say that while you need to be casting your burdens and your prayers and your thoughts and what's in your heart to God, there's no shame in coming to someone who's older than you, someone who's wiser than you, someone you respect with like a great deal, like your parents or somebody at your church or one of your friends. You have to have like a support group around you of people who can keep you honest, who can keep you real. And even if they're still struggling with their own things, you can kind of help each other just a little bit. And that's something that nobody actually likes to do. No one likes to tell somebody that they're bad at this, that they're really having a tough time, that I'm struggling with this. And I think that's something we all need to kind of work on, because everyone goes through their bad things. Everyone has their horrible times, and they're just like on the ground, like, I can't do this anymore. And I think we all kind of need to just like be like, hey, it's okay. I have had a moment like that too, and it's real. And you might find somebody who's gone through the exact same thing as you. It's doubtful, but it's possible. Anything's possible. And it's something that I think we all can kind of hold to a little bit. This is a weird example I'm going to use, but there's this show that I love to watch. My dad knows I love to watch this show. It's called Last Chance U. There's this college in East Mississippi where the players that play on their football team are from D1 schools. This is a junior college. They're D1 players who like got suspended, or their academics didn't really meet the grade for the school, or they got arrested, or they did something terrible that they got kicked off their football team, but they still want to play football because that's their thing. And they play at this school, and this school's like absurd. I mean, their football team is ridiculous. They beat teams like 90-7. Like, I'm not even kidding. They hold the record for most points scored in a game ever. And the example I was using was that one of their assistant coaches this past year, the year before this, they actually got suspended from their championship game because they all got in a fight, and like, they lost so many players from that. They got suspended so much. But this past year was called Redemption. The season was called Redemption, and their assistant coach was leading a Bible study for some of the players. And like, if you see the players, they're not very good guys. They're there for their own reasons, and they don't really care. But some of them were like, "Hey, it might be okay. We'll go a little bit. We'll see what happens." Well, they came to a passage that said something about a heavenly father, And one of the players just freaked out. He said something to the gist of if I had a real father, I wouldn't be doing any of the stuff I've done. If I had somebody who guided me in life, I wouldn't have been doing some of the stuff I'd been doing. I didn't even have a real father, man. How am I going to have a heavenly father? There's no such thing as a heavenly father. And the assistant coach, God bless him, was sitting there with him till the day after, trying to explain to him how his father was just his earthly father kind of just messed up and he should have been there, and how he could have helped you and guided you a little bit. And it ended with the player getting saved, and the player was sitting there in tears, realizing, he's like, man, now I actually have someone who can tell me the things I need to know. I have a heavenly father that I can lean on. I have a heavenly father that I can do all these things for. I have a heavenly father. And he just kept saying that. He's like, I have a heavenly father now. And it's great. And he's crying, and it's just wonderful. And the coach, the coach ends up becoming his earthly father and tutoring him and showing him the way. And at the end of the season, they show you what happens to this young man. He ends up transferring out of there with a 3.8 GPA, and it was a 1.7 at the beginning of the season. It was terrible. 3.8 GPA. I think he ended up getting a scholarship offer from Auburn University to play football as their backup quarterback. And he started a game for them last year. He wasn't too good or anything like that. But I think the moral of the story kind of was that if you have a father, or an earthly or a heavenly father, that the support that they can lend you, the support that you get, and somebody putting you on a path is so important. I think it's kind of hit me when I was at Jubilee. The path a lot of you parents have put your kids on is really good. They're at Camp Jubilee. They're helping little special needs people. I saw Edwin Stevens walking with a blind camper who's 40 years older than him, and I was like, I could not have done that when I was that young. I would have just been frustrated. I'm going so slow. I can't do this. And it was just the parents play such an important role, and leadership is such an important thing for kids. And we don't often appreciate it as much as we should. And that's kind of what this message has kind of been about for me, was how leadership is really important, and how our parents and how God just plays a parental role for us through our whole lives. And I just wanted to kind of quote it, end the message with a quote from my favorite song, Be Thou My Vision. It says, Be thou my wisdom, and thou my true word, I ever with thee, and thou with me, Lord. Thou my great father, and thy true son, thou in me dwelling, and I with thee one. So that's all I got for y'all. I don't know if I can...